Before her son Walker was born in the fall of 1996, Patricia Stacy knew little about autism. Stacy had images of a silent child rocking back and forth, withdrawn from human affection. Within hours of Walker's birth, Stacy's life and outlook would change forever.
I had some inklings almost the minute he came out. He looked straight past me, and then later in the hospital when he was nursing, he wouldn't look me in the eye. And then about the time that he was, I don't know, 3 or 4 months old, one day I had him in a basket in the bathroom. I heard this really loud thud, and I looked down and I realized that he had fallen on his head out of the basket. And I waited for that screaming that always came so much with my daughter, Elizabeth, but it never came. Instead, he just lay there frozen. I mean, I knew something's really wrong here.
Stacy and her husband, Cliff, consulted their pediatrician, who told them not to worry. But then the couple began to notice Walker's strange obsession with light.
He would lie and stare out of windows, and he would always orient himself so that he was staring at light. It was like the needle of a compass. And I was always trying to figure out how I could get in between that light and Walker.
She waited for him to start recognizing her, and he never did. So Stacy turned to the REACH program, a community-based service in Western Massachusetts that provides developmental therapy. Stacy remembers Walker's first visit.
He was diagnosed by them as having sensory integration disorder. I went for a couple days feeling, oh, that doesn't sound too bad. You know, they said it's a intense form of sensitivity. Cliff said, you know, I really don't think we're out of the woods yet, Pat. I just looked up sensory integration disorder, and it's cross-referenced constantly with autism. It really hit me hard.
Stacy was entering a controversy over how young a child can actually be called autistic, something she would later focus on in her new memoir, The Boy Who Loved Windows. The diagnosis itself is complicated. Children can experience a range of problems. Some are oversensitive to touch or sound. They may lack empathy or never make eye contact. Some can't speak, or at least not in a meaningful way. But the question many doctors ask is, at what point can you confidently diagnose a child as autistic without panicking parents needlessly? Karen Blum is an Amherst child psychologist. She says children develop at different rates, and most aren't diagnosed with autism before they're 18 months old.
A label can sometimes be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It can limit how one, the expectations one sets for a child. At the same time, we know early intervention makes a difference.
I wanted them to diagnose him with the worst possible case scenario so that we could start fighting it.
When Stacy's son was almost a year old, she visited Dr. Stanley Greenspan, a prominent child psychiatrist in Maryland and author of The Child with Special Needs. He treats infants whom he considers at risk for autism, those who consistently miss key emotional and social milestones.
You don't want to think of it in terms of necessarily diagnosing, quote, a disorder, let's say in a 4-month-old or 6-month-old or 8-month-old. You want to think of it in terms of the degree of risk you're seeing for the disorder, because in that way, you're not labeling a child at a very young age, but you're saying, look, we have increased risk now, and let's help this baby back on a healthy developmental path.
After he determined Walker was at risk for autism, Greenspan worked with the family to teach Walker cognitive and social skills. Today, Walker is a well-adjusted first grader in public school and at home.
How do you make popcorn?
Okay, I stood on the stool, open the microwave, put it in, press popcorn, then press stop, waited, and it like exploded to this bag. Oh, look at all that.
Stacy is convinced that labeling Walker disabled as an infant is what saved him from a lifelong disability.
I recently did a book reading in Denver, and a couple there came with their autistic child in a wheelchair who spent most of his time holding a rubber band between his fingers, playing with a paperclip against his lips. I've had many professionals tell me that had we not done the intensive level of work we did with Walker in his very early months and years, that he would have been mentally retarded. I sometimes wonder, would he be one of those kids that's just in the wheelchair?
But Stacy's claim has its skeptics. Even administrators at the REACH program are guarded in talking about Walker's success. Ann Morehouse, who directs the autism program at REACH, wonders if Walker was ever really autistic.
It's hard to know, did that child make so many gains because of the intervention, or did that child make so many gains because, he was ready for that because of how he's made up. I think the danger is that a parent would read that and think, well, my child can be cured.
But some say being too cautious is also dangerous. You lose precious time. Linda Castronovo believes she missed autistic signs in her son Andrew for his first 4 years.
He would have periods of intense tantrums, but it was just intense crying, and it was pass pretty quickly. And then as a toddler, he had a certain pattern of things he had to do coming down the stairs. He wasn't connecting with his peers in the playgroup. He was slow to talk, too. And the pediatrician, it's five or six words, that's within the normal bounds.
Autism experts say that few pediatricians are trained to recognize signs of the disorder until they are extreme. At age 3, Andrew began to hit other children randomly and aggressively and was asked to leave 2 different preschools. At first, he was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. Then Castronovo consulted a child psychologist in Amherst.
And he said very carefully, I'm thinking lots of things. I'm thinking anxiety, obsessive compulsive tendencies, autism. And I just screamed in my head, no, there's no way he's autistic.
Andrew was eventually diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, a high-functioning form of autism characterized by social withdrawal and intense absorption in certain subjects. On the one hand, the label was devastating.
Again, it was a roller coaster, though, of accepting and then denying and then accepting and then denying. I still have this part of me that says, I want him to pass for normal. I want him to get to that point where no one would know that he ever walked around with this label.
On the other hand, the diagnosis got Andrew occupational therapy paid for by insurance. After 2 years of therapy at home, he was able to enter the public schools with the assistance of a personal aide. But Castronovo says his reactions are still volatile, and his friendships seem emotionally detached.
I believe the brain is malleable our entire lives, but I think the degree to which it's malleable changes. So when I think, had we started earlier, would we have a different outcome? I don't know.
That's one question facing researchers who are continuously revising their definition of autism. Is it an inherent characteristic that can't be altered, like genetic coding? Or is it a severe learning disability that, if treated in time, can eventually make way for normal social and cognitive development? The answer, many say, could lie in how well the increasing number of therapies are shown to help autistic children. I'm Karen Brown.